So this week's shiur is a little different than last week's shiur. It's continuing with the same theme in that we're looking at the deep backstories of Megillat Esther, and we're looking far back into the Pentateuch, into the five books of Moshe, to find some of the echoes that will be heard in this later, perhaps even the last book of the Bible, the book of Esther. And last week, I can say, if we think of learning Torah as playing with Torah, which is how I like to think of studying Torah, because when you play with something, then you get to know it deeply and intimately, and you get to have great delight and joy in it. Torah techa shashuai, as the psalmist says. Then I would say that last week was probably more of a rugby game, and today is a little bit more of a golf game. In that last week, we were very intensively plumbing the exegetical potential of Midrash. We were looking at something which I think is new for many of us, the Petichtot of Masechet Megillah, of the Tractate of Megillah, and trying to see how Rabbi Yonatan had framed Megillat Esther through that verse in Isaiah. And today's exercise in trying to explore some of the deep backstories of Esther is going to be a little bit more of a lighter tone. It's dark. It's definitely a dark theme and a troubling theme, but a lighter tone in that the play is a little lighter. I don't play golf, so for those of you who are golfers and who are taking umbrage at my comparison here, I just think of it as a little bit more of a casual game. So let's just say that today's forays into the interpretive world of the rabbis is a little bit more on a less intensive, more casual tone. So what do I mean by that? I guess that probably the classic way that most people are introduced to Midrash, the associative play of the rabbis, is through language association. So Chazal, our Chachamim, the rabbis, who were the most adroit and adept at this kind of language play, would read a text very carefully and find reference to other places within Tanakh through language. And that's where we're going to start today. If we're going to jump right into the fourth chapter of Esther, then we'll find some very evocative and highly associative language that will take us immediately back to Genesis. So let's have a look together at this, the opening verses of the fourth chapter of Esther. We are post Haman's nefarious plan. He's already set a date for the annihilation of the Jewish people. And when Mordechai discovered all that had transpired, he tore his clothes, and he puts on sackcloth, and he goes out to the city, and he cries out a loud and bitter cry. And then he goes to the gate of the king. He can't enter any further into the court complex because of his attire. Now, this language, vayizak za'aka gedola umara, is very evocative. It's evocative for those who are students of the Torah, and it's especially evocative for Chazal, the ultimate students of the Torah. And they're going to direct us in two different places in rabbinic literature to consider this appeal, this cry of Mordechai, in the context of a story in Genesis. And they want to direct us back to the scene where Yitzchak, where Isaac is giving blessings to his sons. And we're very familiar with this story in Parshat Toldot. is a story where Yaakov pretends to be Esav, where Jacob pretends to be Esav. And after Esav comes in from the fields, after Yaakov had taken or stolen the blessing that was intended for Esav from Yitzchak, who was near blind and who was duped into believing he had given the bracha intended for Esav to Esav, when in fact he'd given it to Yaakov. We see that Vayecharad Yitzchak charada gedola ad me'od. This is a very similar language, right? That Yitzchak trembled, an exceedingly great trembling. There was a fundamental, an existential fear that Yitzchak felt at this epiphanous moment, at this moment when Nafal HaSimon, when he realized that he had mistakenly given the blessing to Yaakov. Vayomer, Mi'efohu, Hatzad Zayid, Vayaveli, Vaochal, Mikol, Beterem Tavo, Vavarcheu, Gam Baruchi. He's in shock. And he said, who was it who had brought me this game that I had thought was Esav? He's the one who got the blessing. And then I have to say that from a very young age, I would say I studied these verses numerous times as a youngster through my formative education, and also hearing them in synagogue over Shabbatot. I remember very, very vividly this verse, Lamed Daled, the 34th verse, and the subsequent verse, as sticking with me very deeply. So much so that as much as my teachers would tell me that Esav is a rasha and Esav is a terrible person and an evil one, I couldn't help but feel bad for Esav. Kishmoa Esav et divrei aviv, when Esav heard the words of his father, Vayitzak tse'aka gedola umara ad me'od. He wails, he peals, he dissolves in his angst. Is there, I'm sorry, is everyone muted?
The Hornsteins are not muted.
Yeah, can everyone please mute their sound? Vayitzak tze'aka gedola umara ad me'od. Vayomer la'aviv, barcheni gam ani avi. Habracha achat hilecha avi, barcheni etz ani avi, etz ani gam avi. Vayisa'atz kolo vayefk. That's the continuation of these verses. And there's little that Yitzchak can do. He does end up giving Esav some form of a blessing, but I would like to focus on this pain, this very raw pain that is being portrayed here in the verses so plainly and so openly. And it's a pain that is picked up many generations on in an entirely different framework, an entirely different story by Mordechai. In the language, Vayizak Zaka Gedola Umara. These are the two places in the Torah where we have this type of descriptive cry that is so painful and so open and so raw. And though you can argue with me, give me an argument here as to why I shouldn't so easily compare them. Look at the difference. Vayitzak versus Vayizak. They're not an exact parallel, it is true. Also, Esav's cry is stronger because it's not just Vayitzak Zaka Gedola Umara, the way that we have with Mordechai, Vayizak Zaka Gedola Umara. With Esav, there's the Ad Me'od element, which echoes Yitzchak's great dread upon his realization. So I would say that that Esav's cry is more intense. The language itself is more intense. Additionally, the word vayitzak, the shoresh tadi aleph kuf, compared to zayin aleph kuf, is slightly more intense. Though Rashi, in a verse in Iyov, he will say the two are pretty much interchangeable. And that is an idea that is echoed also by the Radak and the Maharsha, who say that the Tzadi and the Zion can be interchanged. And so we're really dealing with exact parallel verses. There are other
commentaries, such as the Malbim, who says, no, the Tza'ak, the Tzadi is more intense. And that is, if we think about the sound that a Zion makes as opposed to a Tzadi, when a Zion makes a sound, it's a continuous sound, a Z, but a Tzadi has to be pronounced as each in its own sound. T-t-t-t-t-t-t. I can't, it's like staccato. I can't do a Z. I have to t-t-t-t-t-t. And so each one carries with it a little bit more of a harshness and a little bit more of a pain. So even in the sound of the letter, we can hear an intensified pain. So Esav forms this pain that is then suffered many, many generations on by Mordechai. And this link is made in the Midrashic literature, both in the source that I bring you here in Esther Rabbah, and in a parallel source in Devarim Rabbah, that I did not bring. But we'll look here together at the source in Esther Rabbah. They say pretty much the same thing in slightly different language, both authored by Rabbi Chanin or Rabbi Chanina. Amar Rabbi Chanin, man da amar kudsha brichu vatran hu, yitvatrun b'nei ma'ohi. Very funny language. Rabbi Chanina says, whoever says that God is a vatran is like a sucker, like someone, someone who's willing to forego his, not stand on ceremony or has a lot of forbearance. Yitvatrun b'nei ma'ohi. Let his innards be loosened, right? Like it's like the ultimate laxative. If you think that God is going to just forgive and forget, then you have another thing coming. Ella ma'arich ruche begave dile. But he has a long memory. He's very forbearing, but then he does collect his due. Teda shahare tzaka achat yizik Yaakov le'esav. Dichtiv vayitzak tzaka gedolam v'mara. And know that Yaakov caused Esav this real cry, the honest cry, a raw cry, a cry that a 9-year-old reading these psukim intuitively understood to be true and not false and coming from a very real place. And the Torah wants us to be impacted with that. Well, eventually the cry that Yaakov caused Esav to cry will come back to haunt. And I didn't continue here with the Hebrew. Esther Rabbah doesn't continue, but Devarim Rabbah does make it explicit. You have it here in English. As a result, Yaakov's descendant Mordechai cried a loud and bitter cry. So what Chazal are doing here is they are seeing this verse in Esther, Perek Daled, as referential to the story in Genesis and Bereishit in Parshat Toldot. And now it is up to us to try and get to the source of Esav's pain and try and see how Mordechai is expressing that pain or is expressing the ramifications of that pain. And if we can ever get beyond that pain, or are we doomed to always suffer from the pain that our forefather caused his brother Esav? So if we look at the context of where Esav comes about to steal the blessing from, I'm sorry, Yaakov comes about, Jacob comes about to steal the blessing from Esav. Then we see that that the loss of the blessing was already in play. You recall the story that happened before Yaakov came and tricked Yitzchak into giving him the blessing. This is a story where Yaakov is sitting in the kitchen, his eyes tearing over a pot of stew. And Esav comes in and he is coming very hungry from the fields. And he says, Haliteni na min ha'adom ha'adom hazeh. Just feed me from this red broth that you have. I'll open my mouth like a camel, as I'll say, and you just keep on pouring it in. I need that. What we have in Israel is the manna chama, the instant soup and tradition soups, I guess. I just need it immediately. I don't have time to wait for this. V'Yaakov natan le'Esav lechem u'nezid adashim. Yaakov Yaakov had given this to him on condition. Yaakov said, I'm happy to give you from this, which I have worked so hard for, so long as you sell me your primogeniture. Sell me your birthright. Vayochal bayesht, vayakam bayelech, vayivez Esav et habechora. And Esav was more than happy to do so, or at least from the, maybe I'm taking liberties here with my understanding, but he was perfectly willing to sell Yaakov his firstborn status, if not the blessing that his father was, that was due to him as firstborn, then at least the firstborn status. Now, if we had seen referential language in Megillat Esther and Perek Dalet, hearkening back to the stolen bracha, here too, we have another point of reference, and that is in the third parak of Esther, where Haman is thinking through his nefarious plan to destroy the Jews, to commit genocide, but it was not enough for him to just kill Mordechai. He wanted to kill all of the Jewish people. And it was belittling in his eyes. It was too little. It was as this translation is, he disdained or he spurned the idea of just doing harm to Mordechai. Now, one can say, Tamar, come on. There have to be, you can't just take a word and do associative play. Well, I give myself liberty to do that if these are the only two references throughout the entirety of Tanakh to the word Vayivez. There's only two times in Tanakh that the word Vayivez is used. And one is Vayivez Esav, and then the other is Vayivez Haman Be'enav. So clearly, the author of Esther is insinuating, is encouraging us, is prompting us to think back to that initial and formative biza of Esav when he spurned the Bechora and wants to introduce Esav into the Megillah, both through Mordechai's deep cry and through this belittling attitude of Haman towards killing Mordechai alone. And so it's with these two pins and a third that we'll explore in a little bit that I'd like now to try and get to the deeper concept of where Esav is lurking in the Megillah and how we can move beyond the specter that he casts over the Megillah. And so to do this, let's go back and see the context of Genesis and where Esav belittles the primogeniture, belittles the bechora, the firstborn status, and what causes his cry of pain. So let's look together at this Midrash and Midrash HaGadol. Midrash HaGadol is a relatively late 14th century compilation of Midrash coming from Yemen. The Yemenites are alufim. They're wonderful at preserving ancient traditions. It's essentially a compendium of many ancient Midrashic traditions, including from the Targumim, from the Aramaic translations, which themselves are interpretive traditions. And so let's see what Midrash HaGadol has to say about Esav's discussion with Yaakov, as Yaakov is sitting over his pot of stew, and how Esav is relating to Yaakov's offer to give him stew in exchange for the firstborn rights. Amar Esav lo, Esav said to him, what do I need any of this for? V'chi yesh olam haba? Is there really a world to come? O shama yesh tchiyat ha-metim? Do you really think that there is something beyond the experience in this world? Me'ata adam rishon shemet shema chozer uvalo? Is Adam going to come back to life? Will Noah come back to life? Even Avraham, who was the most beloved of God, who chaviv alav yeter min hakol, shema chozer uvalo, do you think that he will ever come back to life? Is there anything that this will afford me, being the firstborn, that I can get beyond this world? I don't believe it. In other words, what the Midrash is saying is that Aesop's question is Aesop's spurning of the firstborn rights was not a spurning of some kind of a material gain. He had a fundamental existential issue that was expressing itself through his spurning or disdaining of the Bechorah. He did not believe that there was anything beyond the here and now. That's the message that the Midrash is reading into his Vayivez et HaBechorah, and he spurned the Bechorah. And Yaakov says to him, Im ein olam haba b'lo tchiyat ha-metim, Bechorah zo lama lecha. So if you don't believe in any of this, brother Esav, then why do you care to be the prime brother? The prime brother meaning something that will outlive these 70, 80 years that we have in this world. Sell your birthright to me today. And he does so immediately. And what the Midrash here is pointing out is that there's an existential question that exposes Aesop as a nihilist, as someone who is not thinking of a world beyond the world that exists for him right here in this moment. And this is a theme within the Midrash that is picked up also in Kabbalistic literature and elsewhere in the Midrash. But I bring you here a section from the Zohar where you can see the same theme echoed. Esav so despised the birthright. He wanted Yaakov to take it from him even without payment. I don't want this. This is foreign to me. This concept of something deep into the future is not who I, Esav, who was named after that which is fully begotten. The word Esav means fully formed, right? Not something in potential. Not like the word Yaakov, which means he will continue to struggle or he will continue to strive. Esav is that which fully is. And so it's so foreign to his concept that he would be willing to give it to Yaakov. He doesn't need to sell it to Yaakov. Vayakam vayelach vayocha. And that is the subtext that the Midrash is reading into this despising, this language of despising. Later on, when Yaakov returns and strives with Esav and has to contend with a more mature Esav, has to contend with an Esav who is a number of decades on, who has lost not only his prime position as eldest, but has also lost the prime blessing that Yitzchak was going to give him and instead was stolen out from under him by his younger brother. He meets a more sober Esav. And Esav now, instead of the anger and the wrath and the impetuosity that we had seen in a younger Esav, is now going to offer Yaakov something beyond what when they had left. And says, I want to reframe our relationship, Esav says to Yaakov. And when they meet up again, years on, when their families have already been built and they're older men, then Esav says to Yaakov, Vayomer, Nis'a v'nelecha v'elcha l'negdecha. Let's go together. We should not be so separate. There is still a unity that can be expressed in our twinning. We are, after all, twins. We might reflect different elements, but we are twins, and let us go together. And so the sages will see that these words are redolent for them. They're heavy. There's so much exegetical potential in these words, nis'a, v'nelecha, v'elcha, l'negdecha. Just the number of verbs, the sheer number of actions here indicate that he must be saying to his brother Yaakov, as they meet again, there's something more at play here. And so let's look at how Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman understands the Esav's offer. Shamar Esav im Yaakov, Amar lo Esav. And this is again as Yaakov is about to re-enter into the land of Israel after the long sojourn at his father-in-law Laban's house. Yaakov achi, Yaakov, my brother, nahalech shnenu ba'olam hazeh ke'achat. I don't believe in the world to come. I don't believe in a future where there will be some kind of a resuscitation of the dead. But let the two of us walk in this world as one. Let us share in the glory of this world. Now, excuse me. I apologize. I had intended, and Carol, I hope that you're here. I had intended at the beginning of the shiur, and I had written myself a note, but in my impetuosity, I had forgotten to mention this, that the shiur today is sponsored by Carol Damon in memory of her mother, Rose Goldberg, Brina Razel bat Avraham Vicherna, in commemoration of her yard site, and may we all be blessed with good health and a long life. And apologies, Carol, for not having started the shiur like that. But getting back into the topic at hand, what Yaakov, when he hears this from his brother Esav, has had just experienced a fundamental wrestling with the power of Esav. You'll recall that before this interaction of Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov had remained alone, had sent the rest of his family on, and he strove with a man until daybreak. And I'm just going to leave it here for you to read in either Hebrew or in English. And you're familiar with the story that he and this man were locked in a wrestling embrace, and that took them deep into the night and then into the dawn. Now, who is this man with whom he strove? The sages will say, Rabbi Chama the Rabbi Chanina Amar, Saro shel Esav haya, that he had this interaction, he had this encounter with the genius of Esav, let's say, with the angel of Esav, with the essence of Esav. And so he had decided already, prior to his encounter with Esav, prior to Esav saying to him, Nahalech shneinu ba'olam hazeh ke'achat, he had already gone through that battle with the power of Esav. And so his response reflects this torturous encounter with the angel or genius of Esav. When he says to his brother, Esav, thank you for your offer that we go together, but no, I will have to defer. Yaakov, Yavorna Adoni Lifnei Avdo, Yaakov says to Esav, let my master go on ahead of his servant. Vani et nahala li'iti, l'regel hamalacha asher lefanai, l'regel hayiladim, ad asher avo el Adoni Seira. I have to travel more slowly until I will meet up with you, Esav, in Seir. Seir are the Harei Edom, the Harei Seir. When you're driving down from Jerusalem down to Eilat and you see all of these red mountains off towards the east, those are the Harei Edom. That was the portion of Esav. And so when I join up with you in Har Seir, we will then be together. But right now I have to move more slowly. And so let's see how the sages will unpack this very, very loaded exchange between Esav and Yaakov. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, Shamat Esav im Yaakov, Amar lo Esav, and we've seen this before, I referenced it earlier. Esav was really saying to Yaakov, it's not about the journey that we're going to take and we can share sodas. That's not what we're talking about here. I want us to partner. I want the West and Israel, the West meaning what Edom and Esav represents, to partner in this world. We have this partnership that we have to forge and work on. Amar lo Yaakov, and Yaakov says, this isn't for me. Kol olamcha tchila. Yavorna Adoni livnei avdo. What does it mean? Pass before his servant. Mahu yavorna. What does it mean? Pass before. You take your world first. You are the creature of instant gratification. Right? You're the one who just needs that soup pouring down your gullet. You need the manachama. Tol olam chatchila. I am one who can bear the long road. I am one who has en yeush. There is no despair, no matter how long the road may be. Look at this beautiful interpretation of Midrashir. As the verse goes on, and Yaakov says, Ad asher avo el adoni Seira, until I catch up with you in Seir, in your land, Esav. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman. Chazarnu al kol ha-mikra, v'lo matzino she'amad Yaakov v'Esav b'Seir. We've combed through the whole of the Bible, and we haven't found one place where Esav is, where Yaakov ever makes it to Seir. When will he make it to Seir? Lo'olam haba. He will make it to Seir in the world to come, in the days of Messiah, at the Ketz Hayamin, at the end of times, as we have in the one chapter prophecy of the prophet Ovadia about Edom. Ve'alu Moshiim b'har Tzion lishpot et har Esav, v'yitala Hashem l'melucha. At the time when God will be king over the entire world, then will the saviors ascend from Jerusalem, from Mount Zion, to judge the mountain of Esav. Only then will Yaakov make it to Seir. And then you can continue to read on and see extensions of this idea. The concept is that by allowing or by dismissing Esav's offer to him, Yaakov was saying, I am willing to delay gratification. I am willing to take my share of my blessing and my bounty only at the end of days. I can manage through this life and hold that immense blessing in abeyance. And here I bring source after source that speaks to the same concept. And as the Zohar will say, on the same, in its interpretation of the same words in Genesis, when Yaakov says to Esav, let my master pass over before his servant, Rabbi Elazar says, this is exactly what we had said before, that Yaakov, lo ba hashta'inun birchan kadmai, devarche avoy. He didn't want to assume the blessings yet. He said, I will wait. And then here you have, and I'll read this in English, some of the most painful words, perhaps, in the Zohar. Yaakov did not wish as yet to avail himself of the first blessing that he received from his father, not one of which has so far been fulfilled, since he reserved them for the end of days, when his descendants should need them in their struggle against the nations of the world. Hence, when Esav said, let us take our journey and let us go. That is, let us share together this world and rule it in partnership. Jacob replied, no, Yavor na Adoni livnei avdecha. Let my Lord pass over before his servant, which is saying, you have dominion in this world, and I will journey on gently and reserve myself for the world to come and for the latter days that flow on gently. Where we have an expression that the Jewish people is not afraid of the derech aruka, of the long journey. This is the concept from where that idea springs. And then the Zohar rounds off here, until I come to Seir, I will endure subjection to you until my time will come to rule over Har Seir, until I get to Har Esav. And then the same verses is brought that we're familiar with from Ovadia. V'alu moshiim har tzion lishpot et Har Esav. So, this is a concept that is a very strong midrashic motif throughout the encounters of Yaakov and Esav, where Yaakov is willing to delay his gratification, and Yaakov is willing to suffer pain in this world. And if you will, bear with me. I hope it's not too much of a pain. While I just read a couple of sentences that I wrote on this concept. It was on the concept of the Gid Hanasheh. You'll recall that in the battle, in the encounter, the wrestling between Yaakov and the genius of Esav, or the angel of Esav, that the angel of Esav injures Yaakov. and he injures him on his thigh. And then Yaakov subsequently will make a decision to bow to Esav over and over again. And that is an expression of his injury at the hands of the angel of Esav. The damaged sinew, which is the Gid HaNashef, from which we're still very mindful of because of the food taboo. We don't eat from the Gid HaNashef animals, from the, I forget the term, but you know what I'm talking about. The damaged sinew symbolizes Yaakov's precarious standing in this world. His insufficiency was on full display as he wrestled with Esav's angel, losing to the powerful spirit of his brother, crippled so that he could never fully stand erect. His weakened Gid HaNasheh leaves him insecure. It marks what we call Pshitat HaRegel, which colloquially translates as bankruptcy, but really means uncertain footing in this world, which hates him so. The Gid HaNasheh was damaged, and that damage was enshrined in Yaakov's family as a food taboo, right? Even prior to Har Sinai, as a constant memory of Esav's dominance. Gid HaNasheh marks the triumph of Esav, and the peal of Mordechai in the book of Esther also marks the triumph of Esav. It impacts the nature of every clash between these two nations. Though Yaakov will wait for his reward, though the Jewish people will wait for our reward until Ketz HaYamin, until the end of the days, Jewish history has seen episodes of defiance towards oppressors, none more so than Purim, right? Of refusal to cower when confronted by the enemy. And I'll just mention this as an aside, that the two holidays that the sages founded to mark the development within Israel of our willingness to confront an enemy, the holidays of Hanukkah, the holidays of Purim, the holiday of Purim and the holiday of Hanukkah, are both represented, for those who are interested in Kabbalistic literature, by the legs. They parallel the legs. They represent Netzach and Hod, which parallel the legs. They restore strength to Israel's weakened legs. They mark our victory over our enemies and offer glimpses of the bounteous blessings that are in store for Yaakov. They give us our legs back. They restore the weakened Gid HaNasheh. So with that, and the limited time that that we have, the last 20 minutes that we have together, I would like to take this concept of Esav and how the specter of Esav lingers throughout Jewish history, is very prominent within the Megillah when Esav comes to threaten Israel's security and kick out our legs from under us, so to speak. And Mordechai evokes that threat that is a very sincere and legitimate threat that we brought into the world, Yaakov brought into the world through causing Esav his Za'aka Gedola Umara Ad Me'od. I am going to just draw your attention to one more parallel, linguistic parallel, in the Megillah to Esav, where later on in the Megillah, Esther will cry and plead before Achashverosh to avert Haman's evil decree. And the language that's used is vatifk vatitchanen lo. And she cried and she pleaded with him. And this is a language that is not found in the book of Genesis, but is found in a prophetic work, a chapter in Hosea, which talks about the encounter of Esav and Yaakov, and talks about that battle between, or the wrestling of Yaakov with the angel of Esav. Babetan akav et achiv, in the womb he tried to take over his brother. Yaakov tried to best his brother. Ubeono sarah et Elokim, and in manhood he strove with a divine being, with the angel of God. Vayasar et malach vayuchal, bacha vayitchanen lo, and he strove with the angel, and Yaakov was going to best the angel. But the angel cried to him and pleaded to him and said, if you let me go, then eventually we will meet again, and God will, and God will be present at that meeting. That's the interpretation of Rashi of that verse in Hosea, where Rashi says, when Yaakov said to the angel of Esav, I will not let you go unless you bless me. And the angel says, you must let me go. The way that Esav managed to extricate himself from this wrestling embrace was by saying, eventually, the Holy One will reveal himself to you in Beit El, and you will find him, and he will speak with us both. And he and I will agree with you concerning the blessings that Isaac, that our father blessed you. Now that was, now, Oto malach sarosh el Esav haya, v'ayam me'arer al habrachot. The whole striving at that point was still this vestige of pain that Esau felt at having been cheated from the brachot. But here, what the prophet is saying is that Esav admits that there will come a time when I will admit to you, Yaakov, that the blessings truly are fully yours. So with all of this, before we get to the final discovery of how we can get past this in the Megillah, for after all, the Megillah is a work of triumph, of victory. It is not a book that marks the defeat of Yaakov at the hands of Esav, but rather it marks the victory of Yaakov over Esav. So how is it that Esav is still present in this book? So Esav has come, and we see him through Mordechai's cry, which was caused by this ancient existential hostility between these two forces of Esav and Yaakov. We see it in Vayivez Haman and Vayivez Esav, that this spurning of the Bechorah, the spurning of just wanting to do damage just to one individual of Israel. No, the entirety of Israel has to be damaged. We see it also in Batefk Batetranen Lo, in that language, which brought us to the context of Esav and Yaakov striving again. And so with all of this striving, and with all of this pain, and with all of Esav's dominance in this world, how is it that we are able, Yaakov is able to emerge triumphant in the Megillah and get past all of the Gid HaNasheh pain that still had lingered from the book of Genesis? And to answer that question, I'd like to share with you a Gemara that is the basis for one of the most beautiful passages in the Pachad Yitzchak. Pachad Yitzchak is a particular favorite sefer of mine. It's it is the homilies, the ideas of Rav Yitzchak Huttner. And for those who love Rav Kook and love poetry in Hebrew and love associative language and the rhythm of written poetry through Torah, then the Pachad Yitzchak is for you. So in order to understand the Pachad Yitzchak, who will come and answer our question for us about how we best Esav through the Megillah, how we get past the specter that Esav has cast on the Megillah, first we have to look at this wonderful, wonderful piece of Agadita, this Gemara and Masechet Shabbat. Amar Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. My dichtiv, what is the meaning of this verse in Isaiah? Ki ata avinu, you are our father, ki Avram lo yadanu, v'Yisrael lo yakirenu. Ata Hashem avinu goalenu me'olam shmecha. You are our father because Avram didn't know us, And Yisrael, meaning Yaakov, didn't recognize us. You, Lord, are our Father. You, our Redeemer and everlasting, is your name. So the simple meaning of this verse is obviously that if we're trying to get to an Abba, then our Abba is the Ribono Shel Olam, is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not Abraham, not Yaakov. But that does not satisfy the gaming mind of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani. In the name of Rabbi Yonatan, who wants to play further with this voice and listen to this conversation that is created. In the future, God is going to call Avram up and say, what are we going to do with these kids? Can you speak up for your kids? Because they're constantly sinning for me. Avram says, raising up my hands, I've had too many generations and too many millennia of having to suffer their misdeeds. Just wipe them out. Amar, Amar Leli Yaakov, Zahavale, Tzar Gidol Banim. You know what? Maybe I will say it to Yaakov. Maybe I'll go and ask Yaakov his advice because he knows what it's like to suffer from Tzar Gidol Banim. Tzar Gidol Banim is the pain of raising children. Efshar Dvai Rachmei Alayhu. Maybe he'll be able to feel some compassion for Am Yisrael. Amar le banecha chatu, he goes to Yaakov, Jacob, and he says, look at Israel, look at how they sinned. Omer lefanav ribono shel olam, yimachu hakedushat shmecha. He says the same thing as his grandfather Avraham, just wipe him out. Great line. Amar le, v'sabe tama v'la b'dar teke etza. La v'sabe tama v'la b'dar teke etza. That the grandpa has totally lost his marbles, he doesn't have any sense, and the young one, the grandson, right, is also has no wisdom. Omar leli Yitzchak. All of a sudden, we're going to go to Yitzchak. Banecha chatuli. Yaakov says, if I can't, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if I can't speak to the grandfather and I can't speak to the grandson, let me speak to the father. Let me speak to Yitzchak. And he says, your sons have sinned your sons have sinned to me. Am Yisrael has sinned. Omer lefanav, Ribono shel Olam. Banai velo banecha? They're my sons? They're not your sons? At Sinai, when they said we shall do and we shall listen, then you called them my son, my eldest born. All of a sudden they're my kids, they're not your responsibility. This is such like, I feel like I'm like in Eastern Europe. How much could they really have sinned? How long does man really live? 70 years. And then he goes through this whole calculation. You can read it here in English. You can't really punish for the first 20 years because the mind isn't fully formed. So you only have 50 years left. And then you have to take off 25 years because they've been sleeping for 25 years. And then you only have 25 years left. Subtract 12 and a half, half of the 25, because half of the 25, they're either davening or they're using the bathroom or they're eating. Right? You can't really fault them for any of that, So all you're really left with God is the 12 and a half years. So if you can handle that, then okay, then that's great. Im sovelat kulam mutav. Can you, God, take on those 12 and a half years and forgive Israel? Then great. Im lav. And if not, let's go havzis. Paga alayu paga alecha. I'll take half the responsibility. You take half the responsibility. Vint and Salamar Kulam alai. And if you say, sorry, Yitzchak, you got to take it all. Hakarevid nafshi kemach. Well, I did sacrifice myself to you. Potrin ba'omrin ki ata avinu. So this is where the verse opens. Ki ata avinu. You, Yitzchak, are our father. Ki Avraham lo yadanu v'Yisrael lo yakirenu. Because Avraham didn't have patience for us, and nor did Yaakov, nor did Yisrael. And it's such a, I wish we had time to sit with this beautiful midrash and deal with it further. But I really would like to get to in these last 10 minutes to the Pachad Yitzchak and just taste from the absolute beauty of Rav Huttner's words, which will bring us back to Esav in the Megillah. I'm sorry I only have this for you in Hebrew. But read along and I will translate word for word. Katav Hagra, hinei amahalech b'chol yom tov hu chetzio l'Hashem v'chetzio l'chem. The Vilna Gaon says that we have this principle when it comes to all of our holidays, Purim as well, and Pesach, and think of the classic holidays, Pesach and Shavuot, right? Where half of it is for God, half of it is for us. What do we mean by that? Shavuot, you're spending a great deal of time in synagogue, but you also get to go home and have your cheesecake and your blintzes, right? Shnei Zmanim, so in other words, you kind of divide the day, half for religious endeavors and half for, like, you know, sleeping and food and socializing. Shnei Zmanim Yotzim Heim Min HaKlal Hazeh. But there are two exceptions to this rule. Yom Kippur, who Kulo LaHashem. Yom Kippur, we don't get to indulge in things that make us physically happy. Hu Purim Hu Kulo Lachem. And Purim is almost all indulging in things that make us physically happy, and there's very little religiosity to it. Ella shelukushta d'milta in kan shum yotze min haklal. But if you really want to get to brass tacks, then there's really no exception. Kiyom kippurim hu yom kippurim. Many of you have heard this concept before, that we're dealing with two sides of the same coin. Yom kippur is a day that is like Purim. It's a Yom Kippurim. It's a day that's like Purim. Lomar, shnehem biyachad mehavim b'inyan zeh moed echad. The two of them express one concept. They are one moed. They are one appointment with time. B'moed hazeh hakolel Purim v'yom Kippur. And this moed, this appointment with time, includes the concept of Purim and Yom Kippur, that they are two halves of the same coin. Chetzio la'ashem v'chetzio lachem. Half is for God, that's Yom Kippur, and half is for you, that's Purim. And that's what the Gra offers. Now look at what Rav Huttner says. Nase na bit'on ti'ima kala min matko shel hadvash hazeh. Let's try and even derive the littlest bit of sweetness from this abundant honey. There's such beauty to this concept. And so he goes on and says the following. He quotes the Gemara that we had just seen in Masechet Shabbat, the Gemara that we're going to call Palga Alai U Palga Alecha, the Havzi's Gemara. Half for you, God, and half for me, Yitzchak says. And then he goes on and brings an idea of Rav Blazer. Rav Blazer was Rav Yitzchak Blazer. He was one of the prime students of Yisrael Salanter, who was the master of Musar in the 19th century, and Rav Yitzchak Huttner, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, and himself a student of Rav Kook, here in the 20s, he brings this idea of Rav Blazer, and he says that, excuse me, Ki ha'tana hazu mechuvenati lema'amar chachamim, that the whole idea here hinges on a statement of our sages, Ritzonenu la'asot ritzonecha. All that Israel wants to do is God's will. However, we have two things that hold us back. There are two constant elements that get in the way of doing what we're supposed to do in this world. One is called Se'or Sheba'isa. That's the leavening agent. That's Satan. That's the Yetzer Hara. That's the thing that's going to take me away from my sobriety, from my clear-mindedness, from my resolve, from my determination to do the will of God. And the second element that's going to distract me and remove me from doing the will of God is shiabud malchiyot, is the fact that I am just too busy trying to stay alive because I am under the subjugation of other peoples. Klomar, mash'ein anu mekaymin ritzonecha, if we're not doing your will, God, ein zem etnei she'ein banu haratzon lasot ritzonecha, it's not because we don't want to do your will, ela adaraba, but just the opposite. Adir chafatzenu hu dafka lasot ritzonecha, we extremely and supremely want to do your will. Ela she'ein lo koach l'ratzon hazeh lahagia lidei shlita, but this desire of ours can never rule over us because we have these two elements that are constantly pulling us away from divine service. Se'or Sheba'isa, the Yetzer Hara, that which takes us off track, and the sheer difficulty of being alive as a Jewish person in this world. subjugated by other peoples. Shnei ha'ikuvim halalu hem ha'yisod l'chalukat palga alayu palga alecha. But Blazer says these two impediments stand at the foundation of half for you and half for me. Ha'se'or sheba'isa hu homonei she'ata garamta lo. God, everything that distracts me from doing your will, well, you gave me an evil inclination. You gave me laziness. You gave me distraction. You gave me sloth. You gave me lust. You gave me all that takes me away from doing your will. So about this, I'm saying that's on you, God. But Yitzchak is saying, when it comes to the subjugation of Israel under the under other peoples in the world, that's on me. Because the subjugation under other peoples is that which Esav introduced to Israel, insisted that Israel suffer from. V'alamoneya hazeh ani omer, and Yitzchak says, about this impediment, I say, I'll take that responsibility. And that's what Reb Blazer says. And now, in other words, I just bear with me another few minutes. Reb Blazer is saying this Gemara in Shabbat, palga alai upalga alecha, half of it is your responsibility, God, because of the nature of humanity. Half of it is my responsibility, Yitzchak is saying, because I brought Esav into this world and Esav dominates Israel in this world. And here is where Rav Huttner will relate this to the concept of Purim and Esav in the Megillah. And he will say the following. These are the words of the Vilna Gaon. Ki shnei hazmanim shel Yom Kippur v'Purim, that the two holidays of Yom Kippur and Purim, him besod mechta l'Hashem u'mechta l'chem. It stands at the fundamental of half being on God and half being on you. In other words, when there are two elements that form one whole, shlemut achat bat shnei chatzain. It's one whole formed by two parts. Listen to the beautiful language here. Almost brings me to tears. Hashlemut hi hatzaaka ha'amuka ha'ola me'tomot ha'nefesh. He's referencing here the cry of Esav, and then the much later cry of Mordechai. And this unity of the palga alayu palga alecha is this deep cry that rises up from the depths of the soul. Ritzonenu la'asot ritzonecha. It is our will to do your will, God. These two elements of being distracted by our humanity and being unable to rise up because of our subjugation are both answered by Yom Kippur and Purim. On Yom Kippur is a day when the Se'or Sheba'isa is removed, when that which distracts us, our need to be cloaked within our human constraints, is removed. And Purim is the day when Shiabud Malchuyot is removed. It's the day when the Saros Shel Esav does not have dominance over Yaakov. Let's see if I can give me one more minute. I know we're past time, but I'm just going to take you to this last source where you see verse after verse after verse where the Megillah is going to state very plainly, Rabim me'amei ha'aretz mityahadim ki nafal pachad Yehudim aleihem, that this is a time when the Jews dominated, when there was a moment in time when the Saros Shel Esav, when the power of Esav did not cause pshitat raglayim, did not cause a weakening of Israel, did not kick out Israel's feet from underneath them. V'nahapochu, asher yishlutu ha'yehudim heima b'sonehem, something that is so outrageous in the span of Jewish history, that it was entirely turned on its head, and that the Jews ruled over those that hated them. Nikalu yehudim ba'arehem, V'ish lo amad lifnehem, ki nafal pachdam al kol ha'amim. This is the absolute inverse of Shiabud Malchuyot, that no one was able to stand against the Jews. Ki nafal pachat Mordechai aleihem. where the palga alai, the half that Yitzchak takes upon himself, is not an impediment. So I'll just read the end lines of the Pachad Yitzchak, and then I will give myself 30 seconds to summarize today's shiur. Umikan hu machatzit shel chatzio l'Hashem. That is the half of Yom Kippur. V'ilu bapurim mitkayemet ta'ana shel palga alai. On Purim, we're able to overturn the impediment of the shiabud machliot, of the subjugation on the parts of other peoples, subjugation of Israel by others. Umikan hu machatzit shel chatzio lachem. Menimsa bepurim mistalek ha'makev ha'acharon ha'moneya tabrtsonenu la'asot rotzonecha. We find on Purim, we have the ability to remove that final impediment of not feeling beaten down, of having that glimpse in this world of what the autonomy and the imperialism and rule and dominance of Israel might look like. Omikan Migilat Esther. Klomar Nitzgale ha-Hester shel haratzon ha-Pnimi la'asot ritzonecha. And that is the fundamental message of Migilat Esther, which is to say the revelation, legalot, the Migilah, revealing the inner will to do your will, because it is no longer held back by the thousands of years of subjugation of our enemies. And so, and I don't know if you are with me in feeling that Purim this year might be a very different experience for the Jewish people than it has been in the millennia that till this point. But I want to just give myself 30 seconds to recap this shiur. The shiur was devoted to finding Esav in the Megillah, to finding the deliberate references to the stories of Esav and his confrontation with Yaakov and his disenfranchisement at the hands of Yaakov, and how that has plagued the Jewish people from Genesis through the Megillah up through our times, and how Esav is a dominant force even within the Megillah. But I think that the Pachad Yitzchak here has redeemed the Yaakov, or has demonstrated how Yaakov through the Megillah manages to upturn that Olam Hazeh, this world dominance of Esav, if only for a moment. And may we merit seeing many Purim moments of Vinahapohu Asher Yishlatu HaYehudim Hema B'Soneihem. So thank you very much. I will go to questions now. Okay. Lee, and for anyone who needs to go, then please, I don't want to hold anybody. What initiates the cry? The Mordechai's cry is initiated by this deep dread of the potential annihilation of the Jewish people. Esav's cry is brought about by the horrible realization that he will never be able to fully achieve what it is that Yitzchak had planned for him to achieve. I wish I could be more forthcoming. I wish I could be more explain that more fully, but I think that that's the best I can do, because I think that it's as unclear and as clear as I was just able to say it. The tzadi echoes through Genesis verse name of Isaac, the cry itself, descriptor of the Han tzadi 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 vayitzah tzak tzak. Yes, very strong, because Breshit is always the Maaseh Avot Siman Lebanim. Breshit is the template. It forms the pattern that will be picked up throughout the rest of Tanakh and then throughout the rest of Jewish history. Because it's formative, and thank you, Ruth, it's a beautiful concept that you just brought up, there it will be stronger in Genesis because it will just reverberate throughout the rest of history. Baruch Mordechai echoes Baruch Yaakov. Wow, profound. I did not think about that. The bracha, right? Baruch Mordechai echoes Baruch Yaakov and the bracha of Yaakov. Esav was wanting to do tshuva as he is destined to do, and Yaakov did not recognize that. That makes sense to me, that there is a process that Esav too has went through in his life and goes through as his destiny. If we think of Esav as a symbol for the West and Western development and Christianity, and that of course is a would require a shiur in and of itself. But yes, there is a growth process that Esav himself will go through, that Yaakov truncated, and Yaakov does suffer for that. Did you say last week you were going to explain Haman in the introduction, the role of Amalek this week? Amalek is in a certain sense embedded within Esav, but wait for the Bil'am shiur, because Bil'am is where I will treat Haman, very, very, directly. If we don't submit to Hashem's subjugation, then we would be subject to someone else's subjugation. Our decision came first, not the other subjugation. Purim is the tikkun of when Am Yisrael did not want to accept oral Torah. Ritzonenu lasot ritzonecha. Shoshana, I hope that refrain throughout Pachat Yitzchak, was what prompted, your comments. Because I think it really resonates with that idea of Pachad Yitzchak, especially in the times that we are living in. Absolutely. V'nahachochu is something that we're witnessing on a minute by minute basis. And it was really, my pleasure. Can you elaborate on Raglayim and the two holidays? To the best of my ability, and please take this with a grain of salt, that my background is not in study of Kabbalah. I can just only speak to the ideas of Netzach and Hod are two of the attributes of God that are reflected in it. Again, please, I'm going to apologize with a huge caveat that I'm speaking on a very elementary level, because that's the only way that I can understand this. They correspond to the different parts of the human body. And they also correspond to different holidays. And they correspond to different figures among our avot and among our greats. And so if Hod is Aharon, Netzach is Moshe, both of them are represented by the legs. Hod is the holiday of Chanukah. That's Aharon's holiday. It's the holiday of Kohanim. Netzach is the holiday of Moshe. That is Purim. Chanukah is one leg, that is Hod. Netzach is the other leg, that is Purim. And Purim is the other leg, that is Netzach, yes. So these are the two legs that symbolize the Torah Sheva'al Peh as well, where our security and our strength stand on. Both of them are damaged by other empires, other forces, but through Hanukkah and the success of the Hasmonean revolt, and through Purim and the success of the Gulat Purim, then we overturn the weakness that the enemies try to cut down our legs with. The Pshitat HaRegel, the Gid HaNasheh. These are two holidays where Gid HaNasheh is conceptually is overturned. Yes. What about the Zaka of Yisrael and Mitzrayim? There are many Zakot, and they will reverberate throughout all of history. This is a pattern that is set in motion, and we will find it through different contexts. Yes. Vayivater Yaakov. Is there a connection to God not being a Batran in Esther Rabbah, where Yivater in this sense is, he strove with, right? Vayivater Yaakov, and he struggled with, not giving up. Perhaps the language is evocative. The cry of anguish in the face of a, by the way, if, are you all okay with me going through these comments? If you feel like you need to leave, then that's fine, please. I don't want to hold anyone back. The cry of anguish in the face of irrevocable death of a dream people evokes in me the eternal ghostly cries of our murdered brethren all through the ages, all through the ages, for their adherence to being Jews. Yes, a cry, but I just wanted to, I wanted to, and I don't know if you feel this as well. It's a cry that we brought into this world, and we might not have had a choice but to do so. But Yaakov caused Esav that cry, and the psukim don't shy away from that. It is a strong, not, I wouldn't say condemnation. I'm saying it is a complexity of our reality and of our interrelationship with Esav. Hi, Sandy. Look forward to seeing you as well. So if anyone else has any questions, and if you would like to speak now, then I'm happy to take questions. Otherwise, please be in touch with me if you have any further questions or comments. And I look forward to seeing you all next week. Be'ezrat Hashem.
Thank you.
Pleasure. Okay. Be well.
I think that the separation of Yaakov from Esav is a refutation of the two-state solution.
I see the let's say the exegetical potential embedded in Bereishit for us to continue playing with the Torah. So I definitely accept all play creates more knowledge.
Thank you
So
very
thank
much.
you for that.
You were
Be
very,
well.
thank you very much indeed. You were very interesting, if I may say so.
Thank you.
And
Simcha.
I loved the way you brought Pachad Yitzchak.
Thank you.
Oh,
In a love.
on my source sheet, I didn't. I only got the like. It didn't go through the whole thing on the source sheet. Was it just me? You know what I mean?
There
Like
was one source at the
one
end.
part? Yeah.
The that was the Pachad Yitzchak should have been entirely on your source sheet.
Yeah, and
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. When I printed it out, that's what printed. So I'm not. I didn't get to go back and look. Let me see. Wait a minute.
It should be the
Should be
entire
there. All
Pachad
right.
Yitzchak there.
I'll look on the website later just
Yeah,
to.
what wasn't there was that those verses from Esther, which referenced the dominance of Israel over their enemies.
Oh, yeah, that whole big section. Yeah. Okay, cool. I'll
Yeah.
check later. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Pleasure. Be
Wonderful.
well, everyone. Laila tov.